Lake Effect brings you conversations about what's happening in Milwaukee and the people, places, and organizations that shape our community. This is Lake Effect Spotlight from WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.
Playing games is a year-round hobby for some, but buying and exploring new games is also a great holiday tradition. Games are an everyday endeavor for fiction and hobby writer James Lowder. Every year he joins us to share his Games to Gift list, which includes everything from two-player games, RPGs, and tabletop. So whether you're just curious about getting into gaming or looking for a gift for the serious gamer in your life, chances are Lowder has a suggestion for you. He joins Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski with his picks for the best games of the year.
Before we get into any of the game recommendations that you have for this year, I want to take a moment and acknowledge and celebrate that this is the 15th anniversary of Games to Gift on Lake Effect. So first off, thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us all these years. Do you remember how it all started? Because I've been here a little over a decade and this was already happening. So how did this all come about?
Right. It grew out of an interview I did with Stephanie Lecce over Hobby Games, the 100 Best and Fantasy Games, the 100 Best, which were essay anthologies I edited featuring game designers talking about their favorite hobby games and family games. And Stephanie is a gamer. And after the interview, we were chatting just about the general topic, and we sort of stumbled across the idea of doing a holiday segment for gifts.
And here we are, 15 rounds later.
Exactly. And it proved to be a lot of fun. And it's great I get to chat with some of the local hobby stores and other gamers in the area and my friends online and social media and get their feedback every year leading up to the segment and see what they've been playing and what games they recommend and put that together with things that I've discovered. And then we end up here.
Yeah, it's great. And speaking of anniversaries, 2024 is also the 50th anniversary of Dungeons & Dragons, which was created here in Wisconsin. So we typically feature some kind of handbook or D&D-related thing for Games to Gift. So what's your recommendation for D&D RPG this year?
Well, the new Player's Handbook, it's not a new edition. It's a kind of a slight update of the rules, but it's been it continues the move for the game supporting diverse storytelling and actively courting a wider audience. In terms of game design, it means shifting away from some of the limiting and dated mechanisms and fantasy tropes from the earliest stuff, but it's a really slick, nicely produced new edition of the game. So that's wonderful. There are also a couple of research books, The Making of the Original Dungeons & Dragons. It's a nearly 600-page, weighty, giant tome archive that reflects the original version of Dungeons & Dragons with annotations by historian John Peterson and other documents that went into the creation of the game. And Peter Biebergall also put together an anthology called Appendix N, which explores the fantasy and comics roots that inspired Gary Gygax and the designers of the original game. And that's a terrific fiction anthology for people who want to see what inspired the creation of Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah, so much history and gameplay in five decades of something. It's pretty great. So obviously, D&D has been around a long time, but every year there's new games and also new trends. So what were some general trends in gaming for 2024 that were most significant to you?
Well, one of the most significant ones for me is the way in which the industry and creators are having to deal with AI. And this is true across all creative fields. There are some publishers who are embracing it or talking about embracing AI in the creation of games. There are other publishers and especially a lot of creators who are pushing back as hard as possible against it. In terms of the tabletop market, the gray area is the publishers who talk a good game about creator rights and respecting creators, but then shift to working with AI sort of behind the scenes, and that's going to create problems down the road.
Yeah, definitely. There are some complications as we navigate this new landscape. What's your personal experience or stance with it?
Oh, I'm firmly against it. I don't think generative AI is a useful tool. It's unreliable. But my biggest problem with it is it is founded upon the theft, maybe a, well, I don't consider it too strong a word, of the work of artists and writers, including myself. When The Atlantic sort of cracked the database for some of the large language model generative AIs, I discovered that I had 500,000 or 600,000 words of text that had been picked up and used in their training and still remain in the language generative AI programs. And I'm not pleased about that.
And with AI, to me, initially, it kind of seems to be counterproductive to some of the core tenets of gameplay and making games and being creative. And one of those things that are especially taking advantage of people's creativity are just RPGs in general or role-playing games. And you have a couple of picks. Let's start with an honorable mention called Devil's Dandy Dogs.
Yes, and that's an excellent point about role-playing games and creativity. I mean, they're built around people sharing stories around a table. And Shauna Germain, who designed Devil's Dandy Dogs, built that in for a diverse storytelling market right from the start. It's a very quick zero-prep game, unlike Dungeons and Dragons, where you have to know the rules, and it takes a while to build up to a game at the table sometimes. Devil's Dandy Dogs requires no prep. You sit down, the tools to tell the story are all there, and it uses some really innovative mechanisms like a tarot-style deck that augments the storytelling.
And for your RPG pick, we have a game called Forgery.
Yes, it's an amazing design by Banana Chan, who has worked on Dungeons and Dragons and Pathfinder, the big role-playing games, as well as Kids on Bikes, well-respected mid-tier indies. But this is a fiercely independent, small press design dealing with serious themes and intended for adults. It's a solo journaling role-playing game where you play a down on your luck art school grad and art forger working to recreate a cursed painting. And it is a very serious game, but it's a choose your own path mechanism. But one of the remarkable parts about it is there's a really cool color by number feature where you create your own version of the artwork, the subject of the story, by playing through the story and making your choices.
Excellent art and role playing. I love it. Our next category is called Gateway Games, which we typically categorize as family games in the past. So, could you explain a little bit behind the intent of the new term Gateway Games?
Well, as tabletop games, and this is partly the heavy exploration of role-playing games that's going on right now, both designers and publishers and retailers as well have been thinking about what these games do and how they interact with audiences and what different types of games can reach different markets. So what used to be called family games is now more commonly being referred to as gateway games. And that reflects the idea that you may be playing with your family, and it may be an all-ages group based on family relationship, but really it's about the level of experience with games and the level of commitment it takes to play. So gateway games are accessible games that play in a relatively limited amount of time and don't require huge investment on the part of the player.
Yeah, so some of these gateway games that you've picked, we have Landmark, Charcuterie, and Ziggurat, but your top pick for a gateway game is called Life in Reterra. Am I saying that right?
Yes, Life in
Yes.
Reterra. Yes. It's a very typical gateway game in that it's accessible and fast. It plays in about 45 minutes, 2 to 4 players, ages 10 and up. It's a tile laying game of rebuilding a far future Earth, that Reterra, right there in the title. But the reason I just love this game is designers Eric Lang and Ken Gruhl push the boundaries of gateway toward hobby games by giving players choices about the conflict level for each session. You can play peaceful, sort of coexisting parallel play around the table, or you can play a more cutthroat version of the game. They also encourage players to identify favorite building sets for use in the game for repeated play. And this moves folks at the table to engage with the design more actively, and that is more like a hobby game, but they do so in a package that plays in under an hour and is accessible to people as young as 10 and up, which is a really interesting melding of the two types of tabletop games.
Absolutely. And speaking of hobby games, these are a little more complex. They require some heavier time and engagement. And, you know, typically they run hours, right? Not minutes. So we have a few, but let's start briefly with War Stories Occupied France.
Yes, it's a narrative-driven co-op game from Osprey about managing the resistance to the Nazis in occupied France in World War II. The narrative aspects of that are fantastic. There's also one of the other games that I really enjoyed in the hobby market this year was Hard Rock 1977, designed by former Runaways bassist Jackie Fox, so she certainly knows the topic. And in this, it's a worker placement game where you're building a rock music career across 1977. The theming of the game is fantastic. Player boards are amps with knobs that, of course, go up to 11.
Love that. And for your top hobby pick, you know, I feel like there's always some type of game that centers around flying creatures, whether it be Wingspan or other birds or bees. So what's your top hobby pick for this year?
The top hobby pick is Wormspan, and it has, you know, quite an all-star team working on it. It was designed by Connie Vogelman, who designed Apiary, the sentient space bee game we covered last year, and is a re-implementation of our 2019 top pick, Wingspan. Instead of trying to attract birds to a sanctuary, players in Wormspan are excavating sanctuaries to attract dragons. The designer of the original Wingspan, Elizabeth Hargrave, served as a developer for the game. But Wormspan is a really notable creation in its own right, moving the base design deeper into hobby territory. Players juggle more tasks and have to more actively balance costs for actions. There's more going on here. Wingspan is terrific. If you've enjoyed that, you will enjoy Wormspan. But if you were looking for a weightier hobby experience, Wormspan is a fantastic choice.
And speaking of leveling up with dragons, we're going to head into two-player game territory, and one game to mention is Lord of the Rings Duel for Middle-Earth.
Yes, Lord of the Rings Duel for Middle-Earth. Like Wormspan, it's developed from the foundation of another game, in this case Seven Wonders Duel, and it was also designed by the same team as the original, but they've added the Lord of the Rings theme and streamlined the mechanisms with three different victory conditions for either Sauron or the Fellowship of the Ring to win out over Middle-earth. It's a really terrific two-player game design.
And some of these weapons that would be used in this Lord of the Ring player game is also featured in another game called Crossbows and Catapults. What is the concept of that game?
Crossbows and Catapults, Fortress War, is an update of a 1980s game where players build castles out of plastic bricks and then fire little discs at the warriors on both sides. It's essentially, you know, gamified playing with plastic army guys. The game company, the Restoration Games, updated the bricks, updated the little catapults that instead of being rubber band driven, now they're spring loaded and pinch mechanism structures, so they're more accurate. The figures are more detailed. They've also added a bunch of different game mechanisms to the setup, making it more of a game and less of just a toy. But it's a fantastic update of that 1980s classic.
Well, and those tactile elements can make gameplay even more engaging when you have the physical thing to play with, in a sense, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And this is, you get down on the floor and you can, or on a large table and set up the castles, and then you just get to fire at the opposing team and try to knock their army guys off the battlements.
So your top two player pick for this year is GHQ, and this is also taking some inspiration from events, people of the past. Can you explain this?
Well, GHQ is the quote unquote lost board game designed by author Kurt Vonnegut, which kind of remarkably he created in 1956 after the limited initial financial success of his first novel, Player Piano. It didn't look like the fiction was going to work out, so Vonnegut tried to give it a shot as a game designer. And what he came up with was a GHQ, which is a chess-like two-player game with an 8x8 grid where the players control four different types of military units. GHQ is General Headquarters, and this is in part inspired by Vonnegut's own military service, as detailed in Slaughterhouse-Five and some of his other works. But this is a really fast 30-minute chess-like play experience with a nice level of depth and replayability. And the package here, Jeff Ingelstein rescued this after seeing references to the game. He found that Vonnegut's notes still existed in his archives. And so he dug everything out, worked with the estate and Vonnegut's agent, and not only republished the game, did a little bit of development on it. Jeff's a fine designer himself, did a little bit of development on it, but published this with Vonnegut's original design notes, as well as things like his original pitch letter to publishers and a rejection letter from one of the houses he submitted the game to. So it's both a really interesting design with a fantastic lineage, but also an interesting archival example of what game design looks like. You can actually order the game from the Vonnegut Museum and Library if you want to support the author's legacy and Vonnegut's mission of supporting free speech.
Now, if people want to go beyond the two-player setting, we have party games up next. And with party games, you say 2024 was a particularly good year, right?
It was, and it's always sort of remarkable that people can come up with variations of the party game structure, come up with new ideas that work for large numbers of people. Like the two-player games, you've got to have certain strengths in your design to work for that number of players. And with party games, you have additional challenges because you've got to make them accessible in ways that, hobby games don't have to be. You have time limitations, all sorts of things that need to work into it.
And to go through a few of them, I love this title and am really interested in learning what this is about. It's called Smug Owls.
Smug Owls, yes, from Runaway Parade. It's a game where you use cards to randomly generate a riddle. Players then quickly offer a solution to the impromptu riddle, and the last player to come up with an answer serves as judge and awards points based on what the best or cleverest or funniest answer to the riddle would be.
Up next for a party game recommendation, we have a game called Phantom Inc.
Yes, and that's a partially hidden information guessing game where two teams of mediums, psychic mediums, are working with their ghostly contacts in the world beyond to identify a hidden object. So the players will pass questions to their ghost and get answers to the questions, but they want to try and limit how much of the answer the other team will see because both teams are trying to guess the same objects, just working with different spirits. And the idea is you try to get it from as little information as possible to stop the other team from benefiting from your questions and answers as well.
And lastly, for a brief party game recommendation, we have a game called This Game Is Killer. What makes it so killer?
It is a nicely just bonkers horror, humorous horror game where players are trying to destroy a murderous alien that has ended up on their spaceship. They're trapped aboard. It's a lot like Alien. And it's a really fast, takes about 10 minutes to play a game with lots of chaos. And it's a perfect game for a party game for groups that want to have sort of a more dark and snarky experience with a higher body count.
So perhaps if people are fans of B horror movies, they'll lean into this game.
That's it. Excellent. Yes, that is correct.
Yeah. And just a note to listeners, there is a full list of your recommendations at WWM.com. But to wrap up our conversation for today, we're going to do your top pick for the year. And it's also a party game, and it's called Adventure Party.
Yes, and that was one of the things that told me this year was such a strong year for party games was the fact that Adventure Party made it actually a pretty easy choice between the large number of great party games, and this is appropriate for the 50th anniversary of Dungeons and Dragons and the creation of role-playing games. For its concept, Adventure Party is a heroic fantasy-themed storytelling party game built around a new take on the D20 dice roll mechanism from Dungeons and Dragons and other role-playing games. And so one player, the guest master, reads a short fantasy scene setup, like adventurers stumble across a dragon in its lair. And then another player describes how they hope to resolve the conflict using details about their character and the items they have. Then they secretly roll a D20. And then they describe to everybody what actually happened. So you start with your, this is what I hope will happen when my bard runs into the dragon in its lair. You roll the dice, and then you describe what actually happened based on the dice roll. So if you secretly roll a one, it's an absolutely abject failure, and you need to describe the scene accordingly. If you roll a 20, it's a stellar success, and you need to describe the scene accordingly. The tricky part comes, well, how do you use your description to distinguish between rolling a 12 and rolling a 13? So there's some really clever design in here because it gamifies both the dice roll and the idea of word choice and storytelling in ways that are amazingly clever. David Smith and Travis Winstead, the designers for this, just came up with a fantastic concept for a party game.
Well, I'm really leaning into the core of creativity that makes gameplay so fun and special.
Right, exactly. It brings all of the people around the table and does that wonderful sort of shared storytelling experience. This is published by Smirk and Dagger, who they also published This Game Is Killer this year and have done games such as Boop, which we covered. They have several other really fantastic games. Their record for hits right now is really impressive for board game publishers.
Well, and I'd say your record of giving us recommendations is equally impressive. I want to thank you and cheers to 15 years, James.
Thank you very much.
James Lowder has worked in fiction and hobby game publishing as an author and editor for more than three decades. He's also been our guest for Lake Effect's annual Games to Gift segment since 2010. This year, he joined Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski. You can hear much more of their conversation at WUWM.com.
You can find more interviews like this one by visiting WUWM.com/Lake Effect. And while you're there, subscribe to the Lake Effect Spotlight podcast.